for centuries. Our kind has stayed hidden on Earth. But darkness has found us again. Prime. This is about the fate of all living things.
Welcome to the Subbeacon Podcast. I'm your co-host, Mike Warren. With me, as always, are my fellow co-hosts, who are more than meets the eye, Jonathan V. Last and Sonny Bunch. Join us over at subbeacon.com, where you can become a patron. Get episodes the day they are published. Comment. Interact with other members of this great Subbeacon community. So thanks so much for listening. We're going to be talking in just a few minutes about Transformers Rise of the Beasts. But first, let's talk about how everyone's doing. Sonny, how are you?
I'm fine.
You're having a great week, aren't you, buddy?
Beth, my wife, who I love a great deal, is in Washington, D.C. this week for work, which is, you know, a thing. We both telecommute to D.C., so sometimes we have to go to Washington to do work stuff, and that leaves one of us at home with the kids, and it's always an adventure. It's a double adventure this week because my daughter is, in addition to doing a day camp at a local high school, a cooking camp. She's learning how to cook. She very excitedly told me about the chicken and potatoes dish that she made yesterday. Unfortunately, I didn't get to eat any of it. She also, however, this is the week that she has the Twilight Camp in Plano. Now, I've mentioned this.
Plano or Waco? This is Plano. The third year you've done this?
Plano. This is the third year. Third year we've done it.
Why do you put yourself through this?
She loves it, and it's great, and it's, you know, I will do anything for my daughter to...
You can build character for her by taking away a thing she loves that inconveniences you.
No.
I do that. No. I do that enough with them already. They already get that life lesson. I'm trying to give them different life lessons by providing them with outdoors activities. I'm like Calvin's dad from Calvin and Hobbes. You know, build character by being outside with the mosquitoes and the rain. That's how you.
Someplace daddy would never go.
No, I would never, because that's where bears are.
Go to the beach, but with the sand.
Anyway, the long and the short of it is, I now have to juggle that with all the other stuff that we have going on through the week, taking my son to his camps and daycares and whatever. It's just a whole thing. Now, luckily, I have gotten help. I've gotten help. We have a babysitter who comes in in the evening to put my son to sleep and stay with him so I can just stay in Plano, which is like, it's not far. It's not as far as Waco. You say Waco is like an hour and a half away. That would be a sleepover camp. But, you know, Plano is not close.
Plano's in the Metroplex, right? It is.
I mean, it's a suburb of Dallas. I mean, it would be like having a camp in Springfield, basically, would be the, if I lived in
D.C. That's where I live.
If I lived in D.C., it would be like having
Springfield
a camp
is 12 miles. Springfield is 12 miles from D.C.
Yeah, but it's like,
Plano is not 12 miles.
But
from
it's
Dallas.
Like, it's probably 30 minutes from, if you lived in the heart of D.C., if you lived in like downtown D.C., and you had to drive to Springfield, it would be about 30 minutes, probably. Assuming you're not in like total rush hour traffic.
Michael, you can disprove that.
I'm right. Efforting this. And I have to say, as much as I hate to admit it, JVL, Sonny is right. Really? 30 minutes
have
from downtown Dallas to Plano.
Yeah. Done.
It's 30 minutes.
Downtown Dallas. Okay. Well, that's not bad. I thought this was a 90-minute each way trip.
No, it's
30
it's,
minutes is fine.
It's like 30 minutes. But it's 30 minutes in rush hour, which becomes like 45 minutes to 60 minutes to get home if I like drive out there. So my options are either drive out there and just one of us drives out there and we stay out there. And then 3 hours later, we go back to the campsite and get her and come home.
Because you've got the other kid. But you can't just leave the other kid at home by himself.
Well, this is why when there's two of us, it's great because right. One of us can go to Plano, one of us stays home. However, there's only one of us this week. So we got the babysitter and she stays with my son. Whatever. It's fine. But it just like the whole thing involves we have other moms are doing carpools, so I don't have to go to the high school a couple days, and there's, like, different outfits, and I gotta, and, like, do you guys watch I feel like Mike might watch the Tim Robinson show, I think you should leave.
Oh, yeah. You know? I'm obsessed.
So, you know the bit with the guy who can't drive the car in the parking lot?
I don't know what I'm doing!
And that's how I feel every time I look at the list of things I have to do. I'm just like, I don't know what any of this shit is, man, and I'm fucking scared. That's how I feel this whole week. This whole week is just me, like, timidly sitting behind the wheel of a car, looking around like, I don't know what any of this is. And I'm accidentally hitting my horn and screaming because I'm so confused by the events around me. That is my life for this week.
It's really character building for you, Sonny.
It is. This is how I learned to become a better planner. It's honestly all fine. It's fine. And I get to spend 3.5 hours in lovely Plano. Most of which I go to a restaurant and I find a place that either has that I can either sit outdoors if it's nice or sit inside in the air conditioning and read a book for like 2 hours without getting the stink eye. A lot of the times you go to a restaurant, and you just sit down with a book, you get the stink eye. They're like, what are you doing here? But luckily, yes.
This isn't a library, pal.
But luckily,
Texas, they say, put away your devil books. We don't like the written word here, son. No,
I don't think that's what they say. I don't think that's what they say. Certainly not where I live. Maybe in like, I don't know.
Unless it was the good book. I bet nobody'd give you the stink eye if you opened up the good book.
Maybe in West Texas, like where Hell or High Water is set, but not here in Dallas. Dallas is, the Metroplex is fairly cosmopolitan. Anyway.
Mike, what is the level of stink eye if what he opened up was not a Bible, but the catechism?
I don't know what that is.
It depends, because look, Texas is a diverse place. You know, there's all kinds of...
Do they have a lot of Catholics out there?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Tejanos?
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Do they have a lot of white Catholics out there?
I think the oldest sure. Catholic cathedral in the United States might be in San Antonio.
Maybe. No, it's Baltimore. Yeah. But Baltimore is the oldest basilica.
I don't know what any of these distinctions mean. I just know it's a churchy building, like with a cross on it, where you go and you do the things with the incense. I don't know. Most of my time now is just spent trying to find like places that are somewhat close to the park I have to go to, where I can go and sit for like 2 hours and read without getting yelled at, and then I go and I drive back to the park. And I sit in the parking lot for another hour and read. That is my evening. I like it's such a weird time that I can't even really go to the movie theater. Like I could probably go see Across the Spider-Verse because it's showing like 27 times a day. But I was thinking about going to see the new horror movie, The Boogeyman, just because I got nothing else to do. And the theater that the draft house that it's playing at is like 30 minutes away. It's starting at 7:20 for some reason instead of 7 o'clock, which puts me right at the like edge of being able to get back in time. The whole thing sucks. Anyway, long story short, my week is annoying and terrifying and confusing. That's what I'm doing this week.
All right. Well, that sounds terrifying and horrible. JVL, what's going on with you, big guy?
You know, I got something, but we can talk about it during outtake, because I want to move us along here. Michael, okay.
People like the dudes chatting.
It's
every
too
time
long.
We
it's way too
people
long.
People in the comments are always like, we need more dudes. We should just do the dudes chatting show. It should just no
oh,
more
that's
movies.
That's a good idea. Yeah. No, yeah. Why are we wasting our time going to see these movies? Let's just chat.
Michael, how are you, buddy?
I'm fine. I figured I'd tell you about my Sunday. Which was...
Did you go to the Olive Garden, to Bed Bath & Beyond?
We didn't have time, actually. Mm-hmm. No, but I know I'm running the risk of, like, a bragging here and making myself sound like dad of the year, but it was just kind of a wholesome story that I thought our listeners would like, which was I took my oldest, my 8-year-old, to go see Sonny's favorite baseball team, the Baltimore Orioles.
They're good this
Camden
year.
Camden Yards. They are good this year.
The whole AL East is good. Like every team in the AL East is above 500, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And honestly, it's sad because the Orioles are having such a great season and yet the Rays are even better. You know, there's just no beating them. But we went in part because this was a birthday present from my brother who lives in Philadelphia, and it was a sort of, hey, let's meet halfway. Let's go see a game in Camden Yards.
Ooh.
And so that's what we did. And so I wanted to make Well, it was a birthday present for me.
Wait, I have a question. I have a question.
Yes.
Is Baltimore really halfway between Philly and DC? I feel like
it's closer to DC, but it is. I mean, it took my brother driving from South Philly. He lives in South Philly. It took him driving there about an hour 45.
Oh, I guess. Yeah. And it's about 3 hours to drive to
an hour and a half to get to Baltimore. Right.
Sort of. So what happened was I wanted to make this special for my oldest. We had actually kind of done a dry run the week before because we went to the Nationals game. The Little League gave free tickets to the Nationals game the Sunday before. So I took both of my ball playing boys and determined that really it was only for the 8-year-old to go up to Camden Yards, not for the 5-year-old as well. Just
good call.
Yeah. I knew that, you know, but I just needed confirmation. But I wanted to make it special for him. And so I surprised him and we took Amtrak up to Baltimore. Ooh. He's never ridden on the inner city rail. It's like a thrill for him. And I surprised him. And so we got to ride up on Amtrak. He was like over the moon about that. Then we got to Baltimore. My brother picked us up and we went down a park near Camden Yards and walked, you know, had the tickets and walked in. So it was already kind of exciting and fun. Then one of those weird things. So like in DC, particularly in like the business that I'm in and the business that we have been in, you know, the life that we've chosen, you run into people at Nats games that, you know, it's just, you either run into people, you know, or you see well-known people or people who are in the news. It's just a common occurrence. And the way that I don't think is the case in most major league ballparks, but we happen to walk into Camden Yards. The game has just started. So we're about, you know, it's in the top of the first and we're walking to our seats and I turn and I see of all people, former deputy attorney general and at various times acting attorney general, Rod Rosenstein, who is a Baltimore. I knew, you know, so the way I all made the connection was I knew he was a Baltimore native, Baltimore Orioles fan, and he had been sort of on my mind with all this sort of legal political news. And anyway, so I just turned and there he was. And I introduced myself and we have a mutual acquaintance and I sort of name dropped that way and was talking to them. And he was with a friend who happened to be a daily reader of the Dispatch, which he told me, which was very nice. Anyway, so I take this opportunity. I'm about to sort of...
You interviewed him.
I did not interview him, but listen. I introduce him to my kid and my brother, and I'm sort of on the cusp of saying like, so what do you think about this Trump indictment? You know, to see if he'll say something, anything interesting. But before I can, my 8-year-old, like, right, like we are so close, like we're all like very close in this area, and he just goes, "Dad, the game is starting!" and like screams it out loud. And Rosenstein, who could like tell where I'm about to go, goes, "He has a great point." And I was like, "Yeah, excellent, good job, thank you, good to see you, sir." And we walked off, and I was like, yeah, he did have a good point. So it was a little embarrassing. It was a little hilarious. I think everybody sort of like got out of that uncomfortable situation. Anyway, so it was just a weird moment. But then we went to our seats. We had great seats. We were on the third baseline, third row. It was a lot of fun. They were playing the Royals, the second worst team in Major League Baseball.
What day was this? Was this a weekend?
This was a Sunday. So it was like a 1:35 game. I was shocked. There were entire sections in the upper section empty.
Camden Yards is a ghost town most days these days.
Unreal, which is so interesting because Baltimore fans are great fans in the sense that they like they are dedicated, and like when you're there, like it is not like seeing a game with Nats fans where like half the people are on their phone, they're like sort of like half paying attention to the game, all this stuff. Like The Orioles fans are into it, and it's great, and it's fun, and like I literally an Orioles fan was born this day, you know, just by taking my
son to Ruxman jersey.
No, although we did end up, his uncle got him and his younger brother two of the foam fingers because I refused to say don't buy anything more expensive than those $11 foam fingers. But
with 15 cents of foam in them.
Exactly. The paint is already like, you know, scraping off. But so we had a great time. The Orioles hit like the Royals hit a home run. The Orioles hit two home runs and a ground rule double. They launched the fireworks after the ground rule double. Anyway, the fireworks are great. It was so much fun. The hot dog, all this stuff. He was having a great time. He got to spend time with his uncle, which was really great. And we get a ride back to the train station. The train is delayed, which is kind of annoying, but we still kind of had fun hanging out in the train station. We get on the train and we get off. We actually stop to get a burger on the way home to our house. And we're coming home and my 8-year-old says, he goes, "Dad, that was pretty much the perfect day."
Aww.
And I was like, this is Nirvana. This is like, this is Dad Nirvana.
Look at you.
This is Dad Nirvana.
Father of the year.
Yeah. So
good job, Mikey.
That's of course, great. All I actually care about is like, you know, my 5-year-old would never say anything like that to me. So that was like,
he doesn't have enough life experience to really appreciate.
He also does not care for me in particular. Oh, so
I don't want to take us on too much of a tangent, but sure. Is it possible that Camden Yard is the most influential building or structure built in America in the last 35 years? I mean, whole downtowns have been remade in major cities all across America because of the design and then success of Camden Yards. And I have trouble thinking of anything more influential.
I don't know. It's a good thought. I mean, it's certainly true in sports, right? I mean, like this, it launched a sort of revolution in baseball park design, yeah. Right? Is that in Arlington, in Texas. So, but no, I mean, you raise a very good point. That's the thing that sort of breaks my heart about being around Camden Yards. Cause we went afterward to Pickles Pub, which is like right across from Camden Yards, just to like, the train was delayed and, you know, so we were hanging out there, and, you know, having a little extra time. And it's like, this is such a great idea for kind of downtown revitalization and all this stuff, except it just doesn't actually end up working. But a lot of people have tried,
you know,
cities have tried.
The problem with Camden Yards is that it's in downtown Baltimore.
Yes.
It is not as nice as people would like downtown Baltimore to be.
Look, it's worked okay for 25 of those years, right? I mean, where it hurt was when the Orioles got really bad, right? While the Orioles had a legacy of success, which created a really loyal following, probably also hurt to honestly have the Nationals show up in Washington.
I mean, yeah,
there were totally. You know, tons of people from Washington who commuted up. I mean, this is why Angelos was against DC getting a team for so
Angelos
long.
Was right to he be against Angelos was right to be against DC getting a team for Baltimore reasons. I mean, he's wrong probably for the health of the game because it's better for DC to have a team than to not have a team. But like, it was totally a reasonable
right. Objection. Yeah, but I mean, it actually mostly benefits the you know whoever owns the Nationals or. In you know, in New York's case, the Mets. I mean, there's a whole you know study in sports economics about like markets with two teams in the same league or you know in the same you know major league organization, and essentially the secondary team just like eats up the table scraps of you know TV rights.
Well,
and
I
stuff.
Mean, this
but
would be like,
it actually doesn't benefit the fan base.
This would be like in where I live now in Dallas, Fort Worth, if you had a team in Dallas and in Fort Worth instead of one halfway in between in Arlington, I mean, like if you had a team in Dallas and Fort Worth, it would be terrible. Like each game would, you know, have 5,000 people at it.
That's right.
But you have one and it's a little better. I would say I don't know enough about architecture is one of those things I wish I knew more about. I wish I was better versed in architecture because it's a really interesting art form. But my one suggestion just from like thinking about it for 5 minutes here is that whatever the first mixed use apartment building that like has like the weird kind of boxes design that all of these mixed use apartment buildings have now that you see everywhere with like the kind of like geometric patterns on the side. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah, there's a term for it. It's sticks and something. I'll effort that.
If you drive up like 14th Street, you'll see 15 of them in a row. Just like these like mixed use apartment building or condo buildings that all look kind of the same. That is the close second, I would argue, in terms of most influential building. But I wouldn't know where to pinpoint it. I don't know where that started. I drove past. So one more Dallas note. Yesterday, I decided to go to this like shopping center area, Legacy Shops or something like that. On the way there, I drove past what was clearly like a corporate housing development. They're building it. It clearly designed for like long term corporate rentals or whatever, and it looked like a prison camp. It was like just awful houses.
The Foxconn model,
all stacked next. Basically, yeah. They had houses that were clearly for like executive types in the front, like townhouses, and then behind that they had these like prison block apartment
for the
complexes.
Workers.
And I was just like, that's the saddest place I've ever seen. Oh, yeah. I don't even want to drive past this. Driving past this makes me sad to look at it. Anyway, sorry.
Well, I feel like that's about as highbrow as this episode is going to get, talking about architecture styles, because
let's get to the fighting robots.
We got to get into the discussion of Transformers Rise of the Beasts. Should we do any? Do we need to do any box office talk about what's
People
going on in
the box office talk last week?
So let's do it. Let's talk about the box office very quick. Transformers Rise of the Beasts. It was the number one movie in its debut last weekend, followed by Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse at number two with a 54% drop. Then you have Little Mermaid, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, and number five is The Boogeyman, which Sonny did not go see. But yeah. What are your thoughts?
I'm a little surprised. I thought Across the Spider-Verse might hold a little better than it did. We'll see how it drops this weekend. If it has like a 35-40% drop in its third weekend, then it could go all summer. But if not, then it's probably just going to end up. It's still going to do very well. It'll be in the 300 to 325 range domestically. A little softer overseas. The big story, I think, shaping up in the world of blockbusters is the softness of overseas. I mean, you still have things like the Fast and Furious movies. Like, those movies only exist because they do enormous numbers overseas, to the extent that the Fast X is already on VOD. That movie came out 3 weeks ago, and it's already on VOD in the United States. But that's because the movie is basically topped out. It's not going to do much more. Right. In the United States and overseas, it's going to make something like 80% of its money overseas, 20% here in the States. It's a relic, and that stuff doesn't really do that anymore. I mean, Little Mermaid is going to make more money domestically than it does overseas. Across the Spider-Verse will probably be pretty close. And that is not the sort of thing that you used to see from these movies, and I have to wonder if, like, again, Hollywood is thinking like, well, we gotta take $100 million out of all these budgets if that overseas box office isn't gonna
be
there.
Because of an over reliance on just like more and more relatively obscure IP, right? Like, you go down the Marvel list.
That's probably at least part of it. I mean, I don't know. I do think that there's just some. There's some fatigue, but I don't.
But Fast X is like vroom vroom boom boom. Like, everybody loves that. Doesn't matter.
Still huge overseas. People love Jason Momoa in that movie. Bouncing around.
All right. Well, that's enough. That's enough box office talk. Let's get into it, because this is such an important movie. We need to get a kind of high level big boy review that we come to expect from Sonny Bunch. Give us that review of Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
Transformers Rise of the Beasts stars Anthony Ramos. Is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Is
Yeah, Broadway legend, Anthony Ramos.
I don't know.
Record scratch freeze frame.
Sorry, how could you be a Broadway legend?
You're probably wondering how I got here.
I don't understand.
How could you be a Broadway legend when you're not 30 years old yet? That's what I don't get.
Because he originated a role in Hamilton and then was the lead in The Heights.
I'm sorry, we were discussing this on text message, but being a Broadway legend is like being a Richmond Braves legend. I'm sure it's very important to a small group of people, but like doesn't actually...
They're the Gwinnett Stripers now, by the way.
So anyway, I'm not going to run through all the cast because I find them boring and
starring
and
Pete Davidson
unimportant. Here's the plot of the movie. Plot of the movie is a giant planet transformer who is basically Galactus.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
He's basically Galactus, and he is trying to eat the animal Transformers planet, and they send a thingamajig to Earth, and they split the thingamajig into two parts, and the heralds of Galactus have to come to Earth to find the thingamajig and put it together so they can bring Galactus to Earth to eat Earth. And trying to stop this are the Autobots, of course, led by Optimus Prime. And the Maximals, which are robots that are also animals. And apparently they have lived on Earth together for all this time. And they didn't know it. The two giant shape-shifting robot species living on Earth at the same time, they had no idea, which is weird. I think that's weird to think about.
But
one of them shape-shifts into animals, so they live in the wilderness. And the other shape-shifts into vehicles, so they live in cities.
I guess that makes sense. But I don't know why a robot would change into an animal. That doesn't really make any sense to me. Anyway, that's the plot. The plot is they gotta put the thingamajigs together to defeat Galactus, or they gotta stop the thingamajigs from being put together to defeat Galactus. It doesn't matter.
But they gotta save the thingamajig.
It doesn't matter.
Too.
Here's my problem. I have a lot of problems with this movie, and I'm gonna explain them to you now. Problem the first is that this movie has no understanding of how dramatic tension works in a film, or specifically in a prequel, because there are
several...
To
start with this being pre-Transformers 1.
Right, so this
takes place in 1994.
This is set in 1994 in New York City. Twin Towers are still there. 9/11 hasn't even happened yet. And Sam Witwicky is in middle school somewhere in California, I guess. That's Shia LaBeouf, the actual
Megan
legend
Fox is still
from
hot,
the series.
Though. She's already hot by 1994.
I don't know. I don't know if we want to go
touching
there.
That one.
She's Vic hot, at least.
But the long and the short of it is that it's a prequel. It's set in 1994, New York City. And there are several moments in this film where a character is thought to be dead or is about to make a heroic sacrifice.
Which character, Sonny?
And so
give us an example.
First, there's Bumblebee.
Ooh.
Who dies, and they're like, ooh. Oh my god, Bumblebee is dead. We're gonna have to take him back to Cybertron to fix him. Of course,
he in the first Transformers?
He's in all five of the Transformers. He's in all five of the Transformers movies. Bumblebee, not dead in those movies. So you know in this movie, he's not going to be dead, which again, like, is a problem if you actually want to care about anything that's happening on screen. And the second thing is the big climactic battle, Optimus Prime is about to sacrifice himself to save everybody.
He's in the first movie too.
And there's a big moment where everyone's like, what's the line?
Your sacrifice becomes our oath.
Thank you. And then of course he doesn't die, and we know he doesn't die because he's in all five of the next movies. He's in all five. So there's no dramatic tension in any of this. And whatever, that's fine. It's a prequel. You know, these things are tricky to do. Maybe it wouldn't matter that much if they, like, killed the random Autobot who's voiced by the annoying guy from Ted Lasso, or if they killed, they do kill Michelle Yeoh's robot.
They kill Pete Davidson's robot.
Well, but he comes back to life, though, at the end.
No
so,
one's
again,
ever really
you,
gone.
You can't expect them to get rid of a high-performing talent like Pete Davidson. I actually like Pete Davidson. I like his show Bupkis on Peacock is more amusing than it has any right to be. Neither here nor there. The movie lacks dramatic tension. It also lacks any stylistic reason to exist. So here's the thing about the first five Transformers movies, the ones directed by Michael Bay. I actually don't even really like those movies. I don't even like them.
You like the first one?
I know people are like, oh, the first one's good. I didn't like the first one. I thought it was dumb, and it wasn't as funny as I thought it was, and everyone was kind of like really excited. They're like, oh, Michael Bay has grown up. He's making it. And I'm like,
Transformer pees on John Turturro, who's playing a man in black.
Dumb.
What's not to love?
The whole thing, it's not good. And again, I don't really like any of them. Some of them I like a little more than others, but like at the very least, they have a unique style and sensibility to them that can, you could describe it a lot of ways, but it's basically a sort of perverse childhood energy. Like Michael, the thing about Michael Bay is that at heart, he is really a child all grown. Like the Verizon ad where he's like blowing things up in the background. He's like pure id. That is Michael Bay. And he brings that energy to these movies. And that's why on a certain level, they are at least watchable. Like the last one, the most recent one, Age of Extinction, which involves dinosaur robots, I think.
Dinobots.
Exactly. Like that movie, I remember I went to a press screening. I saw that movie in IMAX and I left the theater and my legs were like wobbling. I was literally woozy after having seen this movie because it is such an assault on the senses. Just visually, things have sound, editing. It's like a maelstrom. It's a force of nature. And on top of all of that, like it has like typical Michael Bay things. Like remember, I don't know if you guys saw the movie. I can't remember if we talked about it on the show.
Oh, I sure did.
But there's a character in this movie she's an Oxford Don, except she's dressed like a stripper parody of an Oxford Don. And like this is like the intellectual character of the movie, and like that's Michael Bay's sensibility, and it makes it, it's entertaining and it's dumb and it's often overwhelming, and sometimes it like literally made me feel sick watching it on the screen. And like you could say like, oh well, those movies made you feel sick, how can you like them more? But at least I felt something watching those movies. And I watched Transformers: Rise of the Beast, and I felt nothing but boredom and annoyance at the brand maintenance and like a sort of quiet disgust at the calm competence of the film. Like, this is not the worst movie I've ever seen. It is a competent piece of action filmmaking. If I was actually interested in doing so, I could explain to you the plot, but I don't care because it's so boring. And I could follow all of the action sequences, and it was, you know, it's not a jumbled together mass of quick cuts simulating energy in a way that, you know, you put together in an editing room. Like the shots have coherence and momentum, but it's all just so boring. I don't care about any of this. I don't care. I hate watching it and just thinking to myself, this exists because Hasbro wants to have a tie-in with who?
G.I. Joe.
And this is Real this, American at this hero. At this moment in the film, it's a mid-credit scene. The Broadway legend, supposed Broadway legend,
Anthony Ramos, who becomes a Transformer, by the way,
goes to a job interview. And
It's pre-credits because I left the second the credits.
Okay. And as I think they expected a lot of people to do that, because usually this would be a mid-credit sequence.
Yes.
Yeah. And he goes to meets with this guy who's an actor who I meant to look up the name before, but he's one of those. You recognize him when you see him.
Michael Kelly.
Yeah,
Michael Kelly. Thank you. Yeah, I like Michael Kelly. He's great in House of Cards. Loved him on House of Cards. It turns out Michael Kelly's character has lots of information about this Broadway legend that he shouldn't have. And he gives him his business card. He's like, I want you to come work for us. And he flips over the card and it says G.I. Joe on it. It's like, oh, shit, the Hasbro universe. It's all coming together. It doesn't even work as a mid-credit sequence, because if you really wanted to get audiences excited for that, you know who that character has to be? That character has
Bruce
to be
Willis.
Either Bruce Willis or Dwayne Johnson or Channing Tatum. Could be Channing Tatum because it's a prequel. Channing Tatum's
it's
out of that series.
1994.
Whatever. Or Randy Quaid. It could be Dennis Quaid. I'm sorry. It could be Dennis Quaid.
You could have Randy Quaid. It's a very different scene.
You have it, or it could be. Bear with me here. It could be John Cena with the scar on his face, like from Bumblebee. Remember, he was in Bumblebee. Now he could be in the G.I. Joe movie. He could be working for G.I. Joe. That would make sense. And you give audiences that little buzz instead of just having it be like he flips over a card and it says G.I. Joe. Like the whole thing is incompetently done. It's just incompetently done. And I resented that as much as I resented anything else in this movie. And I resented a lot of this movie, as you can tell. Anyway,
JVL.
Slash rant.
Thank you, Sonny. JVL, what are your thoughts on the parts of the movie that you did see?
So I fell asleep. And I I'm watching the movie and I sort of put my head back and I think they have just gotten to Peru. Is that where they are? They're mm-hmm. in South America. Yeah. Maybe they've just gone to Peru. And I wake up and all of a sudden the gorilla beast bot is killing the bird, Michelle Yao beast bot, who I thought they were allies with. I guess something happened, and there's like some indigenous.
She got infected by Scourge.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that. And they were this indigenous family, but the mother of the indigenous family is wearing like a jaunty purple fedora. I didn't clock any of it. But here's what's important: I realized that I have only fallen asleep in the movie theater twice in my life, and the last time was also during a Transformers movie. And it was during the Nightfall. Was that the name of the war? The Last Night or whatever?
By the way, the Last Night is the one that Sonny was thinking of. That's the
yes, the, yeah. I was thinking of the Last Night
with the sexy ox.
Not Age of Extinction.
Was Last Night directed by Michael Bay?
Yes.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, whatever. And I fell asleep in the middle of that movie too. And this was not like I didn't go to a 10:30 screening. This was a normal. You know, it was not especially late at night. That's just how little interest this entire exercise holds for me. And you know, I've seen all these movies in the absolute lack of care to attempt to make anything that's happening interesting to audiences. It's kind of stunning to me. This actually opened very well. Mike, say what you will about Michael Bay, he is trying to give audiences what he thinks they want. This just feels like a book report. Like, you know, Hasbro says, we got to make a Transformers movie. Go hire somebody to just do some content for us. And they went out and got somebody to do some content. There's no, right. I mean, when I say no ambition, I don't mean to make art. There's no ambition to even hold the audience's interest.
That's right.
And I can't understand who this movie is for. And I can't understand who went to see it, honestly. Like, I was shocked that it opened to what, $60 million, $70 million, something like that?
It opened to $61 million, which is, so here's, it's better than The Last Night, but it's much worse than any of the ones before that. It's better than Bumblebee as well, I guess, but Bumblebee, I don't know.
Bumblebee wasn't labeled Transformers,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Bumblebee's like the Hobbs and Shaw of the Transformers franchise.
Yeah, so like, the first one opens to $70 million and then does $320 million, which a multiple of like 4.5 on that movie.
Because it's a fun movie,
great movie.
It may not be a good movie, but it's a fun movie.
That's
works
great
for both kids and adults. Yep. It's a multi-generational hit. You can see why.
So the second one then opens to $108 million, almost $109 million. Third one, $98 million. Fourth one, $100 million. And then the series kind of collapses after The Last Night. That was only $44.6 million. So like, but $61 million is okay, but it's not great necessarily compared to the rest of the series. I really think I'm going to say something here. It's very sexist, and I apologize in advance.
Oh,
but
boy.
I am convinced that this movie opens $20 million more dollars with a Megan Fox type role in the scientist.
Totally agree.
Dominique Fishback,
a female lead.
Dominique Fishback
is a strong female character.
Is
in this,
very
Sonny?
Is a very good actress. She's great on The Wire and We Own the City. She's very good in. But I'm sorry, like this is a movie series that is aimed at 11-year-old boys, and they're looking for a different thing
they're looking for a sex object.
That's the thing. They're looking
put Zendaya in it, and this movie opens to $110 million.
Totally.
Yes, 100%. Anyway, I don't know. Zendaya is also like an enormous star. She's an actual enormous star. Like
right.
when people give their reasons for seeing the new Spider-Man movies, she like She's like four times more frequently cited than Tom Holland. It's amazing. Totally.
Same with Dune, right? Like, that's why they emphasized,
yeah.
even
yeah,
though
that's
she's
why
in
she was, that's Dune why she part was in one. All the trailers, even though she's in like 5 minutes of the movie. Right.
Exactly.
So people were actually like, Zendaya fans were actually angry. They were like, why isn't she in this movie more?
Why did I have
Michael,
to watch
did
this
you, are you
going to
swerve and tell us that you loved it?
It's my favorite of the Transformers movie. Are you kidding? No. So I've only seen the first one and this one. So I am not, I'm not your off. Typical American. Okay. So, well, because Sonny just mentioned it, I mean, let's talk about like the sex appeal or lack thereof in this movie, which again, seemed to me to be the whole, special sauce, so to speak, of like the first movie, which was like, a lot of America was introduced to Megan Fox in that movie, and they liked what they were introduced to. And it was, so yeah, it was all the booms and the crazy machines going and the cars and all that stuff, but it was also the sex. And like,
that car wash scene.
Oh.
Oh my God.
But I mean, there's a reason that was in all the trailers
exactly.
and the advertising campaign. Like,
exactly. But it goes beyond this actress who is like, I agree with you, Sonny, is like, I'm sure is a great actress and a fine actress. Like it's not just that she wasn't what Transformers does well at selling. It was, there was no sex in the movie at all. And maybe this is sort of a broader trend, but like, okay, so you have these like late 20s somethings, like the two main human leads in this movie, and there's like not a spark between them. There's not even a hint that there's any kind of romantic interest between the two of them. Maybe there was, and I just missed it, but there's nothing, right?
At the end, he's watching her on TV. She's off living her own life.
That's right. So, and he's sort of like, that's good. I'm so proud of her.
They're not
platonic
even buds
friend.
Or friends anymore.
No.
They're barely like, they were in this thing for a moment together and then they went their separate ways.
So the other thing about this particular character that I didn't quite understand is why is she an intern? So she's an intern in this museum of archaeology that's also in the New York Harbor for some reason. And like,
it's at Ellis Island.
Oh, it's at Ellis Island.
Museum of Archaeology at Ellis Island.
Oh, okay.
makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. But like, she's like an intern for this idiot woman who doesn't know anything. And she has like PhD level knowledge of archaeology. It's like, I was like, this is stupid. Why? What am I watching?
The whole sequence. Look. I not to go full Breitbart here, but that whole sequence was like, it's such political pandering that it made me angry at the screen. It's this very Twitter specific thing, like white women taking credit for the achievements of, and I was just like, why is this in the movie? Why does this exist? But like, Fishback, I think I mentioned The Wire, not The Wire, The Deuce, the other David Simon.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, she's too young for The Wire.
She's in The Deuce, and she's great in that. But like, again, it's just, that character stinks. That character stinks.
She doesn't have anything to do.
That character is really
underwritten.
Ramos's character is, at least has like a human relationship to carry him through the movie.
Yeah.
But I also don't care. I don't care about the humans in the dumb robots fighting movie. I just want to see the dumb robots fight. So you know what I want from a Transformers movie? I want 90 minutes of Peter Cullen as Optimus Prime spouting Zen phrases.
As if he's Shakespeare. The extent to which all the other Transformers must look at Optimus and think, this guy's a total douchebag. Right. Everybody else is like going about their lives, and Optimus is, he's almost like a character from a Chris Guest movie where there's one guy who is so unself-aware that he is speaking in Shakespearean soliloquy when everybody else is just trying to have a normal conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
So
and I kind of love that in a
weird way, but they don't lean into it.
Like, I would like a movie that leans into it.
They're like embarrassed
about it. Transformers
are
rolling their eyes about it.
Exactly. It's at least interesting. It's so goofy and corny that it's at least kind of interesting. And again, like, he has that voice. He has the Optimus Prime voice. Like, the whole thing is so, as you say, out of place. It's just like, you know, like, Mirage will be like, yeah, we got to get back to Cybertron. And I like being a Porsche. It's so much fun driving around the city. And Optimus Prime is like, The sacrifices that we have to make to get back to our home world will not be forgotten this day. And everyone's just looking at him like, all right,
dude.
All right, Optimus.
It's a little like Thor, the way Thor was originally written in the comics.
Yeah.
Where he would have, you know, I don't know if you guys remember this, but in the old days, the lettering on Thor's dialogue was different from everybody else's.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, his lettering was in almost like old English to make
like a Nordic.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the other thing that's funny is that we have a girl transformer, I think, for the first time, and she even has boobs, sort of. Yeah. And I don't understand this on so many levels. Like, we've got this, she's the motorcycle transformer, and she's a chick.
How do transformers reproduce?
And she's,
Are they manufactured on Cybertron?
Well, no, because they're living, so I learned this from the Rescue Bots animated series that my kids like, which is that not the reproduction aspect of it, but they are like, they're essentially like neuter blank slates on which any of these vehicles or whatever they can transform to can like be like grafted onto. So I don't know how they reproduce, but they are like they are, I don't know what I'm saying here. All I'm saying is they are just like, they are just like blank objects. And I think they sort of like come out. I don't know what I'm saying, but this is not what I want to talk about with this movie. Here's what I want to talk about, because I brought up the show my kids like, the Rescue Bots, to make a point, which is like, this movie, I kept thinking, I can't bring my kids to see this movie. And maybe I'm much more, you know, I keep them cloistered to the culture relative to you know, other parents and kids this age, but like the language, the violence, also the horror, right? Those little spider things that were like chasing after them, like it was like actually horrifying. I'm like, I can't bring my 8-year-old. Yeah.
I mean, this is true of all of the Transformers.
Okay, yeah, so yeah, okay, I mean, but
they all have this level of PG-13.
They're all very PG-13. But they are like strong PG-13.
But here's my point. It's like a movie, like, this movie doesn't know if it wants to be a strong PG-13 movie or if it wants to be a kid's movie, because they're like, the logic of it and the whole, you know, like, oh, he's dead, but he's back. Like, it, that is cartoon logic, right? This is like kiddly logic. And like, why? So then my mind starts spinning, like, well, why are they even making this movie live action anymore? Like, they should just make this a cartoon. They should scale down the violence and make it a kid's movie. And like, it would be cheaper for them to make, they use all the voice. Like, again, it's like Sonny, you and I were talking before we started taping. Like, what is the point of the existence of this movie? Like, it makes no sense.
It's to create a Hasbro cinematic universe.
But it would make more money. I would take my kids to see a tamed down version of this. And I would take them 3 times this summer.
It's like, you know how Toy Biz used to own Marvel? Maybe you probably don't know this, Mike, because you're not a giant nerd. Toy Biz used to own Marvel. Toy Biz owned Marvel. And the whole point of Toy Biz owning Marvel was they could sell more toys if they had comic books and animated shows, etc., where people were like, oh, yeah, I want to buy some Spider-Man toys. I want to buy some X-Men toys. And that's the whole reason for all this Transformers, G.I. Joe stuff. They're trying to sell toys to kids. That's it. That's it. That's the only reason these movies exist.
So I would like to share with you guys, I learned an important life lesson from Transformers and G.I. Joe. So the idea of mashing Transformers and G.I. Joe into a single coherent universe is not new. Marvel Comics did this. And they did this when I was like 9 years old or 8 years old, and the two most important things in my life were G.I. Joe and the Transformers. And I read both of their comic books, and I collected both of their toys. And when it came out, the first issue of G.I. Joe and Transformers, my mind was blown. And I, you know, it was like seeing boobs for the first time.
When much it's sadder something version that you,
no, but like, it's something, you know, that first time when you're like 12 and you never thought that you wanted to see boobs, and you see them, you're like, oh, that's what G.I. Joe and Transformers together was like for me. And then I got home from the drugstore where I picked this up off the spinner rack. Because again, all these things were new. You never, there was no internet. There's no like you, it just appeared in your, you know, in your newsstand or wherever. And I read it and it was so fucking bad. And all of the G.I. Joe and Transformers comics were so bad. And that taught me that these things that you love, sometimes you can't make them go together.
Yep. Monkey's paw.
Yeah, they just, like, they're separate things, and if you put them both together, you can't make them, what you get is bad. And G.I. Joe and Transformers are not good together, and this is, I carry this on throughout, like, you know, it's one of the reasons I hate sci-fi in my comic books, it's one of the reasons I hate magic in my comic books. I want superheroes, I don't want superheroes plus sci-fi, and no. I don't want superheroes plus magic, right? These things are all fucked up, and they mess everything up if you do it. Magic is great, sci-fi is great, superheroes are great. Don't make them, smush them together and make them kiss.
So that's why Doctor Strange is your favorite superhero.
Yeah. but this is a lesson I took from the first G.I. Joe Transformers, because, you know, I'm reading it, I'm 9 years old, and I'm like, this doesn't make sense. They're gigantic robots with giant laser cannons. G.I. Joe cannot coexist in this universe. I am sorry, but Clutch and his vamp are going to get blown up in a half a second by Starscream.
It's true.
And it's true. One final thought on this movie, or a question, I should say, is the title of it. And I know I'm like, by asking this, I'm taking it more seriously than clearly the producers of the movie did when they named this, but Rise of the Beasts. Transformers Rise of the Beasts. From where are the beasts rising? And to and like, to where are they? Like, that's
don't
the other
go away. And never see them again.
Well, I grew up in the 90s when the Beast Wars thing was a thing. That, like, that was my Transformers, was the Beast Wars, which was like, what if it was Transformers, but they were animals? And, like, that was cool.
No, it wasn't.
But I never actually owned any of them, but I liked watching the commercials on TV. It was kind of, yes, at the end, like in the core of it, it is dumb. So like, what is the point of putting these, like putting this into, it's just, I know it's all about toys and selling more toys, but like, there's no narrative direction for this to go. And also, are they supposed to be from the future? And they like went back in time to 1994.
They're just aliens.
Because
just
isn't aliens, Optimus Prime technology. Isn't Optimus Prime like an ancestor of Optimus Primal, who is the gorilla?
No, they say in the movie that Optimus Primal is just named after Optimus Prime, because apparently they all know about the great warrior Optimus Prime, because he's always out there with his Zen cones.
But Primes are a whole thing. They're like a family or something, right? The Prime is a, there are lots of Primes.
But I also thought Optimus Primal was the T-Rex version of Optimus Prime. So I'm really confused.
My issue with all these is that, like, in Transformers The Last Night, it shows that Transformers have been on Earth for thousands of years. Like hundreds, maybe thousands of years. And then all of a sudden we're supposed to believe that in Bumblebee they just started showing up.
Yeah.
What about the Witwickins?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? Remember the Harriet Tubman photo?
I have.
From The Last... Do you remember this?
What?
In Transformers,
that part.
JBL's got to run here.
Yeah,
so I'm gonna be very quick. But in Transformers Last Night, there's a whole subplot about how there's a secret society that knows about the Transformers. They're called the Witwickins, and one of the Witwickins is Harriet Tubman, who I guess helped Transformers escape from the South. I don't understand. Make any sense.
Oh no. Well, that's
all right.
On that note, that's all the time we're giving this episode. Subbeacon.com. What, Sonny, before we go?
No, go ahead.
Sonny, subbeacon.com. Listen, become a member. Thanks for listening.
We lost JBL. He had to go do real work. Mike, outtakes?
Yeah, outtake. I don't know.
I have an outtake. So
let's hear it.
I mentioned last week that I was going to the Dallas Fan Expo to do the bootleg safari show with my friend Aaron Reynolds, the author of Effin' Birds. If you guys like the Effin' Birds cartoon, Britney Spears approved cartoon. Uh-huh. And it was fun. Like, the show itself was fun. The link for it might be live by the time this episode goes up. I don't know. But it was a lot of fun. I think people enjoyed it. But the fan expo itself is such a weird place. Like,
so what is it? It's like a Comic-Con type thing?
It's like Comic-Con, kind of. They have, okay. So there were, first off, they sold 80,000. 80,000 people were there at this convention.
Jeez.
I mean, it was
way
packed.
More than at the Orioles game.
It was packed. I mean, like, I made a very foolish mistake. I just assumed I could drive up there and park. No, can't do that. You cannot drive to the convention center without pre-buying parking tickets. And then I tried to buy tickets on the day of. I like Googled it. I was like, can I? And there were parking passes available. I was like, oh, great. I'm going to get one of these parking passes. Turns out I bought a parking pass for a convention center in San Diego as I was sitting there on my phone. Could not get that refunded. That was $25 wasted. But I did find, I found actually, like, pro tip, if you're in Dallas and you're driving around and you need to park downtown near the convention center, but all the lots are full, go to the Bank of America Plaza parking. Just Google, Google that. It's like a giant, it's like a 10 story parking garage. And it was totally empty. It was only $5 on the weekend. It was amazing. It was like, it's like 3 blocks from the convention center. So it was a slight walk, but not that bad. Anyway, point is, it's packed, and it's interesting because it's like, so they have a celebrity area with Vincent D'Onofrio was over there, and Charlie Cox. They were doing like Daredevil stuff. Rosario Dawson.
Real celebrities.
So like real celebrities. Then they have like voice actors who are again like very popular. Celebrities in their own right. The biggest draw at this show, for fairly obvious reasons, is Shameik Moore, who is the voice of Miles Morales in Across the Spider-Verse. So his line was still like, we left. Aaron and I left the convention center to go get dinner at like 7:30, which was 30 minutes after they like dim the lights and we're like, everybody get out. And he was still signing autographs at his table. He's super into it.
Oh, wow.
So good for him. I like to see that sort of thing. But then it's also like a comic book convention. So like they have a bunch of booths with comic books, but also like video game booths and, you know, toy booths, whatever. And they have like, a bunch of artists there. So like, if you were a child of the 90s, as I am, you will recognize, and you were into comic books, you will recognize the name Mark Silvestri, big deal. That's like, oh, yeah. Our booth was like right next to Mark Silvestri's booth, which was kind of cool for me. I didn't go over and say hi or anything because I don't want to be a big nerd. But that was fun. So like, anyway, and they also have like panels and stuff. So we were doing this panel, and the whole thing is interesting. But it is such a weird mix of people and products, and it's one of the weirdest agglomerations of humanity I've ever seen. So I mean, it's like 40% of people are just like kind of standard issue nerds. I feel very comfortable using that word as a nerd myself.
You're people,
standard issue comic book nerds, you know. And then you have like 10% who are like the real intense nerds who show up with like a little
cosplay.
We'll get to them. Like wagons of comic books to like go up and down the aisles and get them all signed by people. And so like, then you have families walking around, then you have the cosplayers, and like a solid like 20% of the people there are in some form of cosplay. They've got some sort of uniform on. And
is that more or less than you expected to see?
Probably more. It was more, I would say. Maybe 20% might be high. It's probably like 10%, but like, they're like, I want to try and be kind here. There's a lot of spandex being worn. Not necessarily the best choices, but like people are really into it and they're having fun. Good for them.
Yeah.
Then there's like 0.1% of the crowd, which are like, I don't know how to describe these people as anything other than strippers who happen to be wearing comic book like costumes wandering the floor. I mean, like, I'm talking about like pretty attractive women wearing next to nothing. And again, just like intermixed with the families and the 17-year-old boy in his, you know, Spider-Man outfit. And like, I'm just like, this is very, I feel uncomfortable just looking at all this happening. But
you don't see this at a car show. You don't see this at a baseball game.
But this is like reflected also in the product. So like the booths, it's very, I mean, again, it's just very interesting. You'll have like a booth that's just like a comic book booth. Right. And then you'll have a booth like the, my friend Aaron had his Effenberg stuff there. And it's like, he's selling calendars and books and stuff. We were sitting next to the guy who does, who draws Charlie the Tuna on the Starkist cans. It's a guy.
Okay.
Of course there is. Yes. And I almost got something. I was going to get something from him. Like he had, they were Funko Pops. I was going to get a Charlie the Tuna Funko Pop because I eat Starkist tuna literally every day for lunch. My lunch every day is tuna fish sandwich. But he was gone doing panels and stuff all day. So I wasn't able to get it, but neither here nor there. Then you have booths that are what I can only describe as pinup art. Like female comic book characters in various states of undressed with price tag stickers placed in a way to
strategically
placed to hide from passersby what is beneath them. And what's beneath them is usually nipples. They're on the nipples. And I was just like, this is so weird. All of this is so weird.
Is there a social media influencer element to this as well? Right. Like
totally.
There must be. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, like totally. people, this is to
like the big cosplayers. Like this is like, yes, an actual job. They go from thing to their competitions. There's prize money.
But I mean the sexy cosplayers. Like, well, that's a whole, obviously, that's like a whole other level.
Well, the sexy cosplayers have the biggest followings for, I think, obvious reasons, reasons we were discussing with Megan Fox.
Exactly.
And in the Transformers movies.
That's a weird place to like, cause you want to take, not you, but like,
yeah,
you're a parent in the Dallas Metroplex. You want to take your kid who loves Spider-Man, yeah, loves Miles Morales to this.
There was this one girl walked by and she was wearing what I think was, you know, do you know the character Starfire from the Teen Titans?
But I'll look her up right now.
So Starfire is not like an overtly sexy character, but the way that this woman was dressed as Starfire, it's like the Patrick Stewart line from Extras. I could see everything. I could see it all. And like, I was just like, that's not appropriate. You can't walk around like this. You can't walk. There are kids here. There are children in this room, madam. Please put on a robe or something.
I'm sure it was fine.